back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
I'm chatting with Lisa Gardner about her brand new book, Before She Disappeared. Now, we've had Lisa on several times, and she's usually for her D.D. Warren series. This is a standalone. It's the first standalone book that Lisa's done in a heck of a long time. But Lisa, this one introduces us to a new character for this book, Frankie Elkin. She has a very interesting job, and it's not really a job. It's more of a calling or a vocation for her. Can you kind of explain what it is that she does? Because it's something completely revolutionary that I didn't even know existed before I picked up your book.
Yes, thank you. So Frankie Elkin is actually based on a real person I read about, which makes it all the more extraordinary, I think, which is there's this whole network of ordinary people, amateur sleuths, you could call them, that have become incredibly involved in solving cold cases for missing persons. And in particular, the missing person cases that fall through the cracks, representing minorities, bad neighborhoods, underserved populations where you just don't get the police attention and the police resources. And all of this inspired Frankie Elkin. And she's a recovering alcoholic. She's short on belongings, long on regret. This is what she does. She goes from town to town working cold cases for missing persons, in this case, a 15-year-old Haitian girl in Boston. And Frankie is leading this kind of anti-life. She doesn't have a stable job, there's no home, there's no white picket fence, no long-term relationship. And yet, in doing this anti-life, she really has found herself.
Well, what I liked about it is she doesn't get paid for this. She's not a reward seeker or a fortune seeker. She gets these jobs, and in this particular book, she's working at Stoney's, this bar in Boston, and so it funds her. But the neighborhood that it's set in Boston, I believe it's pronounced Mattapan. I'd never heard of it, and yes. they jokingly refer to it as Murderpan. A lot of Haitian immigrants, a lot of minorities. Can you set up this particular setting? Because I thought it was an interesting place to set this novel.
Yes, so I lived in Boston for years. Many of my books have been set there. And the Mattapan community is well-known in Boston before the rich Caribbean culture, the Haitian community. There's parades each year. But also, it's one of the most underserved neighborhoods in Boston. Huge issues with gang violence, hence the real-life nickname, Murderpan. Not the kind of place you should be after dark. What I loved about it for Frankie, who is, just an everyday, not very physically large or, no martial arts. She's just a normal person, white woman. She's an outsider in this neighborhood. There is no way she blends in. So, she's got to find herself a job so she can be a bartender. She has to approach a family, whose daughter has gone missing 11 months ago and convince them, this crazy woman standing on their front porch with no special training can actually make a difference. And I just love that dynamic because everywhere she goes, people are just staring at her. Like, what are you doing here? What the hell is wrong with you?
Well, I would think that if families of people who are missing would be thankful for somebody like Frankie coming into their lives. So what is the little rub that comes into play when Frankie has to go introduce himself to the family of somebody who's missing and try to convince them that she's simply there to do to be a good deed doer?
I got this from the research I did on this woman, Lisa Yellowbird Chase, who's been looking into missing women on tribal lands. And one of the things she talked about is it's kind of is a thankless calling because for her, it's a calling as well. The police do not want a layperson messing up their official investigation. So you're not being received, even if you're free, with open arms from them. And the families just plain don't trust you. Why would you do this? Think if someone showed up on your doorstep and said, I'm going to solve all your problems and you don't have to pay me anything. I'm going to do it just out of the goodness of my heart. We instinctively do not trust those kinds of offers. So it's very, very high conflict. Also, in any crime we know, the family often are involved in something like missing persons. They're also the first suspects. And Frankie will tell you she's not there to serve the family. Her contract, in her mind, is with the missing person. And if that's uncovering every family skeleton along the way, so be it.
When you wrote this book, it's written in the first person from Frankie's point of view. I came across a quote probably about a third of the way through the book, and I thought it summed up Frankie's personality so well, and I'm kind of paraphrasing it now, but she talks about how memories are seared in her mind, and she has so many of them, but they're not what she calls precious moments, but they're burning hot coals that she keeps picking up and turning over in her mind. They hurt, and the more she studies them, the deeper they burn, but yet she comes back for more. What is it in her mind that makes her keep coming back for more? Because a lot of times we think, oh, memories are all warm and fuzzy, but for her, they're not.
Frankie's a very real person to me. She is grounded in real-world trauma. I mean, she didn't have, like, you know, the incredibly all-of-her-twist childhood, but she came from a very dysfunctional family. She has spent her life fighting for her sobriety. Sometimes she's winning and sometimes she's losing that battle, like any addict. And like a lot of people who've gone through trauma, it's also almost something she can't let go. She herself will tell you she can't function when things are normal. She just doesn't know how to do it. But this high conflict, you know, these hyper-emotional states of trauma, rage, grief, that's kind of where she functions best. And so, yes, like a lot of people with that personality, she just keeps coming back for more.
The particular missing young lady in this book, Angelique, disappeared from school, really hadn't been seen again. She isn't going to some podunk town to try to investigate this where the police don't have the resources. This is the Boston PD. And so in today's day and age, there's always the old joke that you just can't get away with anything because there's cameras, there's recordings, there's cell phone data and all that stuff. Why wouldn't Boston PD be able to solve something like this on their own without Frankie?
Well, and if that immediately becomes a puzzle, and some of this I will admit, were the surprises you get as a writer. I knew I wanted to do Frankie. I knew what her mission was. I knew I wanted to do Mattapan. Then I went to interview with the Boston police because I wanted to make sure I was, you know, they would have started this investigation 11 months ago. I wanted to know what the basic steps were. By the time I was done talking to them and all the resources, and the cameras, and yeah, they can absolutely get chats from Snapchat. They can, witnesses, license plate reading technology. I was kind of like, oh, turns out my first problem in this book is, how did this girl disappear? And I'll be honest, I started writing the book without the answer to that question. It was almost like this closed room mystery. When all eyes are upon you, when all technology can track you, how does someone disappear at 3 p.m. and on Friday afternoon? It took me 200 pages, but I finally figured it out.
Well, last time I talked to you, you had done the research at the Body Farm, and so you always really dive into your research and when you do these types of things. Talking to the Boston PD, do you treat it the same way, whether you're researching a Body Farm in Tennessee or talking to a Boston cop or cops or whoever you talk to walking around these neighborhoods? How much of a deep dive do you do into your research?
I'll confess, the research is what I love. I mean, it's the perk of the kinds of books I write. Like so many of my readers out there, I am a true crime enthusiast, is probably the kindest way of saying it. You know, I love nothing better than to read about police procedure and cool new forensic techniques and that kind of thing. So any excuse to do research is well received in my world. So for this book, it was spending time on the streets of Mattapan. It was also interesting enough for me spending a lot of time talking to police and learning about technology, because even though this is not a police procedure book, I mean, Frankie herself is not a detective, early on in my career, I had an editor tell me, in a good thriller, the police are smart. They have done everything right. The villain is just one step ahead. That's the clever cat and mouse readers want, not the police were stupid, and that's why Frankie's there. So by the time I learned all the tricks up their sleeve, I was like, wow, this is going to be a challenge. Because again, keeping with the rules, the police did right by this. They just, all the technology failed. So why? And that became part of the fun.
I'm chatting with Lisa Gardner about her fantastic new book, Before She Disappeared. It's available now wherever you get your books, and God, it's a good read. It took me a few hours to read it in one night, and it just kept me entertained. Lisa, my stomach, I was laying in bed reading this book, and my stomach actually growled as I read the scene that took place in La Foyer Bakery. in Mattapan, and the description of the Haitian bakery items there, I don't think people in the United States really appreciate, and I certainly didn't appreciate the Haitian culture. We think of poverty when we think of Haitian immigrants, and we just don't think of it as a community that's sometimes like our own with the cuisine. What is the Haitian cuisine like that gives this community such its identity?
One of the big perks of going to Mattapan was to be able to eat Haitian food. And I agree with you. I've traveled the world. I actually love to eat, and I love to eat different kinds of food. And I'd never had Haitian. I wasn't even sure what it is, so I had to look that up. And then going to Mattapan, you know, one of the big premier bakeries there is Le Foyer's, which is known for these Haitian meat pies. And I only wish I could describe them, but I can't wait to go back and eat more of them. I can tell you that. It's like almost like a sweet spicy, very delicate, flaky crust, this kind of rich middle that you can get, you know, everything from fish to pork to chicken. So good. The biggest perks of the research was just going through Mattapan, eating at Haitian establishments. And it was really neat to learn about the culture, how family-centered. I mean, it really is a really neat, rich cultural heritage, and I hope readers enjoy learning about Mattapan.
You know, something else that I noticed is when I detected a little frustration in Frankie when she was interviewing friends of Angelique's at school, because teenage girls sometimes can be a little bit hard to talk to. And that sort of came through as, first of all, you don't believe them. Second of all, they have their own language that they use that nobody really understands. And so when you write this book, and I know you're in your late 30s now, when you write this
Thank you.
Sure. When you write this book, do you have to take yourself back to a teenage mindset when you're either dealing with teenagers or a teenager yourself to think how they would think and how they would talk?
You know, it's interesting. You do go back to that teenager mindset, but probably what's more relevant is I have a teenage daughter, so to be honest, I used her to help with some of those scenes. What was more interesting to me was I really am more the stand-in for Frankie. It feels to us like those years weren't so long ago and that we do know what it's like to be a teenager. But according to the teenagers of Among Us, no. We're dinosaurs. We need not apply. And to be honest, with technology, there are a lot of changes in the next generation. I mean, so much of the language teenagers speak now has to do with texting and Snapchat and abbreviations and stuff that, you know, every generation has its own language. This one was a pretty huge change.
Something else that came through in the book is that we all know the story about death leaves no secrets. Realistically, missing persons leave a lot of secrets because it turns out a lot of families don't know these people as well as they think they do when they go missing, and that's what makes them so darn hard to find, right?
Yeah. The things that struck me reading about some of these cold cases and people like Lisa Yellowbird Chase, who, you know, for her this has become a calling too, is, you know, cold cases for missing persons, it's harder to dig into because in many cases you don't even have a crime scene. They're just gone. You have like a last known location. But compared to murder cases and cold cases for murder investigations where, oh, we have a new breakthrough in DNA and that's now going to solve our problems, missing persons can often be, you know, banished without a trace. And yeah, often the clues then are looking inside your family, the person you thought you knew. It can be so incredibly heartbreaking. And so many families will tell you, it's okay. They just want the closure. You know, they will do anything to just know what happened to their loved one. But sometimes those answers are very, very hard to take.
Well, you certainly tapped into it in this book and got me thinking about a lot of things that I have never really thought of before. And I've read a ton of these books over the years. This one is called Before She Disappeared by Lisa Gardner. The book's available everywhere now. It's a standalone novel, her first in quite a few years. Lisa, just another fantastic offering, and I enjoyed it. And thank you for joining us to talk about it.
Oh, thank you so much, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.